Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we're celebrating the end of the heat wave here in Western Indiana. The temperatures have plummeted into the 90s, and it almost feels like a wonderful spring day here in Clinton Falls, Indiana. And we hope everyone else is enjoying maybe the change in weather. The only thing I ask now is rain. So anyone at home experience rain dancing, or experience rain dancer, I should say, we encourage you to do so we can at least have some rain tonight. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, technical engineer, Wayne Larson, music done by Scott Carney, and from his massive Wild World News studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and as always, on time, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. Now, I've been meaning to ask you, it's been pretty quiet around here. The locusts should be in season, but due to the 16 days of 90-degree weather we've had, I've only heard like two locusts. Are they coming out at your place?
Yes, I heard them today, I have to say. I enjoyed that serenade. Of course, the one locust that only occurs one every 17 years,
correct.
They're a different story. I'm not anxiously awaiting for them to return.
What about your lightning bugs?
Well, I'm looking out right now out of the studio window, and I see no lightning bugs. And usually we are, I think it's just been too dry.
They can't get out of the ground. The ground's too hard.
Yeah. So
how are you guys doing?
We're predicting a large insect population this year.
Yeah, I know.
But maybe it's not too late.
Yeah, I figured it'd be like Indonesia. But you're right, maybe it's not. The following, oh, by the way, before we head on to the program, I want to wish Dr. Henry Day a belated birthday greeting. Happy birthday, Doc.
Oh, well, thank you. I wish we didn't mention that, though.
Well, you know how it goes. Yeah. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for July 12th. Well, you know, our good friend Al Jardine is out on the road touring with the Beach Boys right now.
Yes, he is.
And he's having a good time, and I've heard good things about the show. But I bet he wishes he was home right now. And do you know why?
Why is that?
Well, blue whales, the world's largest animal, are being seen in large numbers off the Northern California coast. Now, we know Al lives in Monterey.
Right.
Well, biologists are saying that the whales are being lured into the area by an increase in their favorite food, which is shrimp-like creatures called krill.
Krill, now, right.
That's right, yeah. Now, in Monterey Bay, whale watcher tour operators have reported seeing up to 100 blue whales and about the same number of humpbacks. Now, the blue whale sightings are generally rare. Now, if you see a blue whale, I'd be excited. And that's because the animals are endangered with only about 10,000 left worldwide.
Well, I know Al Jardine's taking his money home in buckets right now, but I bet he wished he was at home seeing these blue whales. That's extraordinary.
It is, and we know he loves them.
tell.
All right. Well, while we're in California, a mother bear and two cubs appear to have headed back into the hills after a visit to the suburbs of Los Angeles, where they took a dip in a backyard hot tub. Now, the three bears were spotted on a four-acre property in Altadena, near the edge of the Angeles National Forest there. Mm-hmm. Now, the animals were nowhere to be found when the sheriff's deputies arrived, but Goldilocks was arrested for public intoxication. All right, I made that part up. All right, now, during the spring, I requested that you had tens of thousands of tadpoles, and we're about to do a frog release story, but I wanted to let everybody know that out of the 111 tadpoles you gave me from Batson's Wildlife, 109 of them turned to frogs and have been released into the wild.
My gosh. Good
There's
work,
two left. They were all healthy. I inspected every one.
Mm-hmm.
And two left. So thank you very much. And
you want some
let's
more?
Head off to Galeros Mountains, New Mexico, where some 150 Chiricahua leopard frogs were released into the mountains there by the Game and Fish Department. Mm. The threatened adult and juvenile frogs were released into an area where they haven't been seen since the 90s. Now, the spotted frog is only found there in Arizona and New Mexico.
You know, frogs and amphibians are kind of the barometer of telling us how our environment's doing. So when the frogs are doing well, and that means the ecosystem's doing well.
Well, I have to say that the ones from your wildlife preserve are very healthy and doing fine.
Well, great.
All right, the big kahuna is free. Juno Beach, Florida. A rehabilitated loggerhead sea turtle has been released back into the ocean, as opposed to like on a highway somewhere. Where now, when the 195-pound female turtle called Kahuna was found near a power plant 2 years ago, she had one flipper, which was halfway cut off, and another flipper that was severely injured.
Mm.
Now, she's in great health. She was released, and she carries a GPS tracker that will chart her movements over the next couple of years.
And you'll keep us up to date.
That's right, I will. All right, well, we discussed this before the show went on the air. We're heading off to Massachusetts to report a shark attack.
Uh-oh.
Resident Dana Richardson said he had a close encounter with a great white shark while paddleboarding off the coast of Cape Cod. Now, the beach was closed for a short time when the shark was seen swimming just off the shore.
Hmm.
Now, experts say that the sharks are being drawn into Cape Cod waters by an abundance of seals.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's right.
Gotta
well, you remember the... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done.
I was going to say, remember the fact that I presented last week, more people are killed each year by coconuts falling out of trees and hitting them on the head than shark attacks.
That's right. True fact.
Maybe the Discovery Channel, I was thinking about this, will do a show something like when coconuts kill.
Yeah. Yeah, or palm fronds. I've been hit by palm fronds before, and they can also injure you. All right, we're going to call this the next story, I'm going to hate myself, but Crispy Critter. Jinx,
oh.
Oklahoma. A raccoon caused a power outage that left 1,200 customers without electricity. Now, the animal crawled onto a transformer, which knocked out the power.
Mm.
And that's why we called that story Crispy Critter.
Now, good title.
He didn't make it.
No video.
No.
Oh,
thank God.
Yeah, really.
All right, to the mountain lions in Kearney in York, Nebraska, get out of town. They know you're there.
Hmm.
All right, now, this is all I'm going to say about this. Jefferson, Oregon. Cows at the Van Loon Dairy Farm have waterbeds to get a good night's sleep. All right, in the local news, wild aggressive chickens.
Oh, my.
Now, if you can't beat them, join them. Chicago, Illinois. restaurant Taste of Chicago, visitors got to sample a fish better known for its ability to jump out of the water and eat voraciously than for being edible itself. State and local officials offered free Asian carp samples.
Yum.
Yeah, well, if you can't beat them, eat them.
That's right. I can't imagine what they do. You know, if it's prepared properly. Of course, they say that about everything.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see how this goes. If we get people interested in eating them, then maybe we can help clear our waterways.
Yeah, really. There's a
bunch
of...
All right, now for the fact of the day. Now, the allergic reaction that some people suffer from bee stings is due to sensitivity to the trace histamine venom left behind after the sting. Now, removing the stinger by scraping and not pinching will not allow the venom to enter the bloodstream. So if you get stung by a bee, instead of trying to pull the stinger out and try to scrape it off with a piece of cardboard, you know, a credit card, something, rather than pulling it out. Now, if you get stung by a wasp, it's just going to hurt.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the Wild World News for Thursday, July the 12th.
Well, once again, an admirable job done by Dr. Henry Day and the staff of the Wild World News in Indianapolis, Indiana. We always appreciate the great efforts they put out and present all of their latest news stories here on Larry Batson's Wild World. I'd like to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, RadioMom.fm, the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And I'll tell you what, why not listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. And, folks, they are not on fire. It's on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. It's God's country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot, always been like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Well, we're talking fishing tonight, everybody. One of our favorite guests. And I hope we have him on the air. Benny Williams, you there, Benny?
I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. From his home in Washington, D.C., and all the way from the state of Washington. This will be confusing for me. Our good friend from Cast for Kids, Jim Owens. Good evening, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing outstanding. Man, it's just seems like yesterday, Benny, that we were in Washington with the fantastic program that you put together each year for the kids from Washington Go Fishing, and hey, they caught some fish this year.
Caught some big bass this year, and I was very excited about that, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to Skip Basin of Delmarva Aquatics, who supplies the fish for the event annually, and he's always been just fantastic in getting us great quality of fish for the event, and he always gives us a little bit extra because he always wants to make sure the kids have a wonderful experience. And I was just so happy that, as many folks know, nationwide we've had one heck of a heat wave, And it's been like a blast furnace here in D.C. with heat indexes and making it feel like 107, 108, 112 degrees. But thank goodness that day, it was absolutely gorgeous. We had a nice breeze. It was a good thing, Jim and Larry, that they didn't have a hammock, because I tell you, if there was a hammock there, I would have just snuck off and taken a nap. No one would have known. But it was a beautiful day, and I just want to thank both of you all for making it a memorable experience. And I also wanted to add one thing in your opening, talking about the blue whales. They are such a fascinating creature, of course, being the largest species, heaviest species that has ever evolved in the entire history of planet Earth. But also the other fascinating fact that they communicate on a frequency so low, and due to the density of seawater, they can communicate from coast to coast. So imagine this. You can have a blue whale off the Atlantic coast talking to one of his buddies off the coast of South America. And that, I just think that's fascinating, and I wanted to share that fact with the listeners today.
I had no idea.
With or without cell phones?
That's without cell phones.
Oh, okay. All right. I just wanted...
You opened Jim right up there. You don't need to feed him lines like that, Benny.
I'm sure I'm sure they've got some
being
kind
on the
of
phone
pod.
Listening to the, being on the phone waiting and listening to the news of the world, it's hard to be quiet with some of those goofy stories. That is just so hard. I don't know where
know.
He gets all of those, but it's amazing.
Because Crispy Critter, when the Crispy Critter story just gave me a flashback from my childhood, because I could have sworn there was some type of cereal called Crispy Critters.
There was, yes, there was at a time.
Now we know what it really was.
Oh, my. Well, he's had several of those stories. I mean, that happens quite often, I guess. Squirrels on the power lines, and birds,
yep.
Raccoons. And I'm sure somewhere bears have climbed power lines and created problems as well. So.
Oh, they're incredible climbers.
Oh, my Lord. You know, it was quite fun to see Jim Owens. The event went so well, and we had such a great time. Of course, when I brought out my cast of critters, I was hoping Jim Owens would be around, but he was... gone with the children.
Yeah, as much as I like seeing your critters, being with those kids is just, you know, that's really my thing. And those kids that came out from the Sharp School in wheelchairs and had several of them had some serious disabilities. But being able to get them out there on the pond and at least give them a taste of what fishing is like, it's just, you know, it's so rewarding for me. And, you know, several of them caught fish.
Oh, I bet.
And the one thing, even the kids that couldn't cast or anything, if their helper was fishing, hooked one, then they could put it in these other kids' hands so that they could feel the vibration. And then these kids would light up like you couldn't believe. Even the kids that couldn't communicate verbally, you knew that they were just having a great time. It was like the middle of the day, and their eyes lit up like headlights on a car. Just so excited they were about this.
Well, it's a great event.
And the other neat thing was that there was a volunteer for Sharp, a lady that volunteered with the school for many years, and she was 103 years old out there with those kids. And that was just absolutely phenomenal.
And yeah, so there's no way I could complain about the heat if she was out there.
Oh, no, not at all. And, Jim, you also might want to mention to our listeners why that was a special day. There was a signing there that day. And I was hoping that you could fill us in a little bit about it. It's very exciting. The future looks very bright for your organization. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, I'd love to, Benny. Thank you for putting that out there. We've been working a little bit with government agencies for several years to put on fishing events around the country for kids with special needs. And over the last few years, we've been trying to establish a MOU, which is a memorandum of understanding between several of the departments, and it finally came to fruition at the event. And we signed a memorandum of understanding with 8 different outdoor management agencies, including Binney's Agency, Fish and Wildlife, and Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Reclamation, and so on. And what this does is open up a lot of doors for us working with all those agencies to put on events for kids on the bodies of waters and on the lands that all of these agencies manage. Because one of their prime missions has been handed down over the last couple of years with the president's call to get more people, especially kids, involved in the outdoors. And when word's coming from up above like that, then the agencies want to step up and make sure that it happens. And it's something, as you guys really know, that's so sorely needed. To be able to give all these kids more opportunities in the outdoors. So being able to sign an agreement with all those really opens a lot of doors for me, and eventually it's going to open a lot of doors for kids.
And well, that's the most
important. That's what's important, the kids.
Yes, you took the words right out of my mouth, Benny. That's just fantastic. And Jim, you have a new program that you were talking about when we were in Washington as well.
Yeah, and as part of that, we've been doing the fishing events for disabled kids for 21. This is our 21st year. Jeez, it's long. But last year, we started doing something new that I had been thinking about for several years and finally made happen, and that's we started a program called Take a Warrior Fishing, and it's putting on fishing events that target wounded warriors and other military personnel and their families. There's events around the country here and there that take wounded warriors fishing, but they might be inviting 2 or 3 of them to go out salmon fishing, or they might even fly a few up to Alaska to go salmon and halibut fishing. But to my knowledge, there weren't any programs that included the family. And I think for the wounded warriors during this transition period that it's incredibly important that they learn to do things with their families, their children. Some of them may never have had the opportunity to take their kids fishing, or maybe thought that they'd never be able to do it again. And so we get boaters to take these folks out and make it happen. And it's the ones that we've had so far have just been unbelievable. You know, it's right up there with the special kids, special needs kids. To me, they're all special. One's just a little bit older than the other.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That's just a fantastic idea, Jim. I'll tell you. That's and these people, they come back from things that they, you know, we cannot even comprehend the things that they've probably seen.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more relaxed than sitting on that. Who was it? Thomas Edison? He used to go fishing on the end of his pier in Florida, and he wouldn't even bait his hook because he didn't even want the fish to bother him. He'd just act like he was fishing, and nobody would go up and talk to him.
Well, I think he was using electricity, wasn't he?
Probably.
That's a good idea.
Well, you know, one more thing concerning the Take a Warrior Fishing. This Saturday is the one that we started last year out at Fort Lewis in Washington State. And we're going to have just over 100 participants. That's the wounded warriors and their families out. We've got over 60 boats that are going to come out and take these folks out. And one of the guys that we're taking out is completely paralyzed from an injury in Afghanistan. And when his mom called us to ask if we could do something for him, I said, absolutely. said, we don't care what the injury is, how extensive, we can take him fishing.
Sure.
And she was crying on the phone. I mean, that we could do this for her son. And those kind of things are our specialty. We're going to make that happen. And that, that's what we're going to try to do, and try to do more of them around the country.
Well, we're going to talk about this for a long, long time and keep the word out on it, Jim, because this is, that's just too strong of a program to have it not do well. I mean, that's a great idea.
And we can never get enough support. And we just have to get the word out, because I know even more people would volunteer. So we have to do everything we can to support you, Jim, and we're behind you 1,000%.
Well, I really appreciate that, guys. I really appreciate it.
Just and before we go any further, I need to tell Jim and Benny that someone in the circle here, Larry Batson's Wild World, has become a fishing addict. And we're talking about our studio producer, Melissa Hovey.
Uh-huh.
And she's found the joys of fishing, and she's driving her better part almost crazy, I understand.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she says, and she will have a statement to make about this. She last week we were discussing this, and she got up on her soapbox, and right after our break, we're going to have her tell you what she told our audience last week, how important it is that men educate their wives and girlfriends the wonders of fishing as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the Fish and Wildlife Service is a strong proponent, along with the RBFF, the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation, in promoting these type of activities. And they're also very satisfying. When I was a co-op student up in Alaska, I had the opportunity to do a large event. It was a one-weekend event at Palmer State Fairgrounds, and I worked with the Susitna Regional Girl Scout Council, and we had a Pathways to a Fishing program at 12 different stations, which covered everything from multiple types of tackle, you know, flies, spinning, bait casts, saltwater, freshwater, the types of artificial lures, the types of live bait, casting stations, so the Girl Scouts could practice casting. And then we taught them about the handling, how to handle your fish for catch and release, and also to be respectful of the different cultures. Particularly in Alaska, their Native Alaskans believe, why disturb a fish if you are not going to eat the fish? And so all of these things we tried to teach the young ladies. And I remember one particular station, it was the bait station, and they had one of the Girl Scout leaders with the girls. She said, well, when I go fishing, I always have my husband put on the bait. And I'm like, well, ma'am, I said, that's why we have this program, because you don't need no man to go fishing. You can get right out there with your daughter, and you guys can have a wonderful time. And I just thought that was, it made me remind me of that particular moment from what we spoke about earlier. But anyway, we ran 900 Girl Scouts through that program in 2 days.
Wow.
And they really, really enjoyed it. And I was so happy to get those ladies out there. And I would love to see more ladies out there in the professional fishing circuits. And also through these type of activities to get young people spark their interest in being stewards of America's natural resources. And hopefully even maybe get interested in partaking of some type of a natural resource management career. We have to do what we can, because they are our future. And as I've said many times on this show, I'm very concerned about generations X, Y, and the millennium generation. And I was putting together some words for a thank you for my volunteers, and this just started, this rhymed because I said we need young people to unplug from the data streams and start get interested in the outdoors and lakes and streams.
There you go.
And oceans and coastlines and mountains and get them outdoors because we all show our age, but, you know, when we were growing up, play was associated with outdoors. There was no such thing as indoor play.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, I think a need now with, you know, most of our youth living in urban areas and the fact that we're plugged in and we never really have any peace. We have a BlackBerry, we have an iPad, we have an iPhone wherever we go. And we need to get away from all that. Put it down, let it go, and learn to listen to nature.
Amen.
You know, learn, hear the silence, hear the crickets, see the fireflies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learn that different bird, that call.
There's a lot more to it than meets the eye in a lot of cases. They're starting to do more research on it, you know, actual scientific research about getting children in the outdoors and the benefits of it, especially with kids that, you know, may have some type of behavioral problem or ADHD or something like that. With my events, we're seeing more and more autistic kids all the time. I think everybody realizes that that's a growing problem in the United States. But getting them involved with fishing, and it could be this way with other outdoor activities, it really makes a difference. And we've had several parents comment on it that, you know, it's not going to cure anybody, but what it's going to do is it helps alleviate some of these symptoms. It really does. It's amazing what this can do.
Well, it makes them more physically fit, you know, because we're noticing more overweight children. And because, like you say, they stay parked in front of a computer or video screen all day and don't go outside. So it's a sad state of affairs. It's a type of world we're not really that familiar with. So when I grew up, at daybreak, I was outside and outside all day. And if I had to come inside, I was pretty upset about it. So
mom was just like, my mom, boy, get yourself inside this house. And
yeah,
get ready
those
for
snakes
dinner.
Outside.
Because we just love to play outdoors.
That's right. Our guest tonight, Benny Williams with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Fisheries, and Casper Kids, Jim Owens. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back with Larry Bass and Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Bass's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hi, everybody. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World. Around the world, I should say. A big hello to all of our listeners in New Zealand, Ireland, England, all across North America. We appreciate it, and all the people that download our show. And our programs can be downloaded absolutely free of charge. Just simply the easiest way to do it is Google Larry Batson with two T's, Wild World. You will get right to the site and see, gosh, I'm thinking close to 150 shows that we've done over the last 2.5 years as we're edging toward our third anniversary coming up in September. And we appreciate all the help that we get through our listeners and our underwriters, such as Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call, 347-243-0700. They got us to Washington, D.C. about a month ago. The iKidsFishing.com is the first kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in western New York. A big thank you to Peter Weimer, who was so kind to send all the DVDs to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, made available to all the children that participated in the event there by the World War II Memorial, and we appreciate that. Go to his website, www.wewantchu.com. It is one of America's finest fishing resorts, and we'd like to also thank our individual underwriters. You can become a supporter of this broadcast. Go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and contact yours truly, and we'll tell you how easy it is. And you'll be mentioned on our program. Those are a few of our underwriters that do make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. On the show, gosh, one of Benny Williams' crushes, D.D. Sharp, will be joining us. Legendary singer from the 60s. We're talking The Twist, The Chubby Checker, the whole deal. And she's going to be live here on Larry Batson's Wild World, and we're looking forward to it. And I am sure one of her biggest fans, Benny Williams, will be listening.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic show. Now, I had mentioned a little bit earlier that our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, has now become a fishing addict, and I thought, what a better place for her to ask questions and communicate a little bit. Of course, she kind of got up on her soapbox last week, Jim, Benny, about her efforts of making sure that women realize the joy of fishing. And Melissa, are you there?
I sure am.
There she is.
Why don't you tell the folks what you said last week?
Well, you know, I mean, all of my life, you know, I was raised with a family that's very country, and they're hunters and fishers. So, I mean, I was raised around it. But I'd always wanted to go out and go fishing. My dad took me out a couple times when I was little, but I barely remember it. But I moved up here to Ohio and told my fiancé, I said, I want to go fishing. Because here we have Lake Erie and all of this. And so finally we got everything together and we went out fishing. And I'm telling you, the day after I went out for the first time, ladies, I got on the phone and I called my dad. And you know what I said to him? I know why you go fishing. I know what the secret is now. And I'm not kidding. This is not something I'm making up. I called my father and said, I know why you go. And it's because it's so peaceful. You can sit out there on the water and you don't have to worry about cell phones, telephones, televisions, iPads. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's just you and the water. You can watch the sunset. It's peaceful. And you're there with somebody you care about. And, you know, and there's another thing that women should think about, too, with fishing. I mean, if you have young boys or even daughters, think about how cool your kids will think you are when they watch you bait and hook. I mean, what boy would not be impressed with that, you know?
Absolutely.
And
those are the keepers.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I've been fishing now with my fiancé now for a little over a month, and about 2 weeks ago I caught my first big one. I caught a 30-inch catfish, nice-sized channel cat, and it was the best experience of my life. And, I mean, when Mr. Owens was talking about how kids get excited when that pole bounces.
Yes.
It's the same for an adult. Oh, my gosh. I mean, every time my fiancé, Wayne, kept saying to me, now watch your pole. And I'm like, I'm watching it. You can be half asleep, but the second you realize that that pole is moving, I mean, everything, every part of you just focuses on that pole. It is just the most awesome experience. And, I mean, I'm a very girly kind of girl. But I've got to tell you, I don't mind baiting my own hook. I don't even mind cleaning the fish. I love getting out there. I love just watching the sunset and the moon on the water and the peacefulness. And it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. I think it's great.
Oh, that's neat. You know, most girls, given the opportunity, love to do it. And most of them are really good fishermen. They seem to have more patience than guys, and they've always done well. You know, I take my wife fishing whenever I get a chance to go out, and she usually whips me pretty good. You know,
ladies are lucky. They always seem to catch the most fish and the biggest fish, without a doubt.
Yeah, well, they're patient. They're not so anxious, you know. And we do another event here in Washington that's open to all kids, and we fish off the shore into a netted area where we stock fish, and we have almost 1,000 kids go through it during the day, and then we clean the fish for them, which we kind of treat as an educational section.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids we have are between 5 and 14. And by far, the most squeamish watching it are the boys. Girls, doesn't bother them a bit. They'll watch them clean those fish. In fact, a couple years ago, we had this one girl that just stayed there. And she wanted the hearts out of all of them. And she kept lining them up and watching them as they would beat out of the body. They're
no,
not
the future surgeon.
All. Yeah, well, I hope so.
Or a mouth.
I just hope that she doesn't graduate to, you know, doing that with boys.
That's scary. That's very scary. But, you know, Jim, I agree with you, too, because I've done a lot of fishing clinics for troubled youth in different camps. And the funniest, the most hilarious thing in the world are these young men that think they're so hard, you know, and they're puffing out their chest and the peer pressure to be hard and macho. And then when the fish comes over and comes baiting the fish, they don't want to touch the fish. And I just bust them out. I just bust them out. I make them feel like little girls.
Oh.
And I say, you're tough, and you can't touch a worm? You can't touch a fish? Oh, man.
Well, my daughter's a good example of that. You know, she was brought up in the outdoors, you know, fishing and stuff, and she's helping me with my events for years before she grew up and got married and moved away. And she was always showing those boys up. You know, first of all, they'd catch the fish and they wouldn't want to touch them and pull the hook out. And she'd go, give me that thing. And she'd grab them and do that and just, you know, they'd turn all red. And she loved it.
Well, to give you an example, we have kind of changed the subject a little bit. But I've noticed when we've done reptile things that it's, the girls are not nearly as standoffish as the boys are. And it's just, I think a lot of it has to do with when they're youngsters. They don't hear, like boys do, don't bring that home or don't do this, don't do that. Not even thinking that a young lady, there's some fantastic anglers that are women. I can't remember the gal's name. I worked with her years ago at the sports shows. And she's one of the best fly fishermen in the world, in the country. And she was quite skilled. Now, I know Melissa probably has a couple of questions for these master fishermen that we've accumulated here tonight.
Yeah, actually, you know, my fiancé and I, we were discussing, you know, Wayne, we were discussing this. We want to, now that I've got the biggest catfish in the house, Wayne is a little upset, and he wants to take it to the next level. So we're trying to figure out how do these people pull out these really big catfish. I mean, what are they using?
it depends.
I'll have
on...
to defer to Benny for that. I've never really done much catfishing. So, Benny, you go ahead and tell her how to catch a big one.
Well, since catfish are benthic feeders, they really don't have very good eyesight, so you want something that has a very strong aroma or bouquet, let us say, and then you can catch some big ones. Get a big piece, something that has a strong bouquet, and a lot of times your success will depend on your bait. For example, in the springtime here in the Potomac, you have many Elocets will be running, and that's your alewife, your herring, your American shad, your hickory shad. And so during that particular time, if you get one of those fish and put that and drop it on the bottom, you have pretty good success because that's what they're feeding on at that time. So when it comes to fishing in general, whether it's fly fishing or bass fishing or whatever, usually the most successful bait is one of its normal, what we call forage species, that it feeds on. And then you're going to have some good success. And that's the whole thing with the artificial baits. They mimic the natural forage species for these fish. And for me... the greatest thrill was trying to imagine what was on the other end. That's what hooked me, was just my imagination going wild, just trying to figure out, wondering what it looks like. That's the greatest thrill, and that's what hooked me.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about Larry. I would suspect Larry is probably one of those guys that just kept bringing everything home he saw. Because he has a gift. I've seen Larry. He has an incredible gift with his critters, and it's they know that he loves them, and they never have to worry about getting hurt. It's a trust thing, and it's just uncanny. The communication, the eye contact, and the touch that he has. That is so calming to his critters, and it's a natural. It's a gift. And how did you develop that, or did you just always have it, and you just figured out you had that gift, or how did that happen?
I have to tell you the truth. I first became interested in doing what I was doing. I was in Rocky Mountain National Park and went to a ranger talk, and this gentleman had this amazing slideshow of the backcountry of Colorado. And the place was filled up, and he had everybody in the palm of his hand. And I think that was inspiration to do what I'm doing right now, without a doubt. And I have to tell you, I used to fish a lot. In fact, as you were talking about, what's on the other end of the line.
Yeah.
We were up in Canada, and we were in northern pike waters, and we were catching quite a few.
And I can still remember when we were using live minis with bobbers, and this pike grabbed that bait, and the moment I felt that hit, I jerked back and the line popped. But I said, that is a big fish. And for about 2 hours, we would wait for that bobber to surface because he still had the bait in his mouth and the hook.
For 2 hours?
We'd try to be, yeah. We'd wait for the bobber to come up, and then we'd very slowly get the boat closer. Just as I was ready to reach out and grab that bobber, it'd go under again. It's like that fish knew I was exactly. But also a lot of my animal handling characteristics I've practiced on my wife, so not quite as successful. It's not nearly as successful.
I hope there's a 5-second delay on this telecast.
Doesn't work very well on that part of the deal. I'll take that right now.
Well, you know, in terms of a female angler that ironically set up a situation for one of my most memorable moments was the Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And when I was a fishery biologist working for the city of D.C. with the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs, I was at my desk one day, and the President's Secretary called my office and said, is this the number, the place that I'm calling? Because President Bush, and this is Bush Sr., wants a fishing license. And I said, well, yeah, I'm the guy. I run the fishing license program for the district. So about a month later, I was in the Oval Office with George Bush.
Oh,
and,
my.
And the Secretary of Natural Resources for Maryland, that was Troy Brown at that time, I believe, and then Barbara Haskell, who was head of Virginia Game and Inland Fisheries. And it was interesting because yours truly pure impulse. I said, well, this is great. I was so excited. So, you know, in politics, a lot of times, you know, people present folks with symbolic, you know, gestures. So I remember Troy Brown shows up with a framed striped bass stamp, you know, maybe about 3 feet by 2 feet. And then the secretary from Virginia just came with the license. Well, yours truly, thinking on his feet at the last minute, had this impulse. And I must have gone to, like, Kmart or something. I bought a fishing vest. And since I supplied licenses to all the vendors in the district, greater metropolitan Washington area, and I knew all the shops. So I went by all my vendors. They had stores. I said, what's hot? What's hot? And I filled that vest with the hottest lures on the Potomac.
Wow.
From my vendors. I paid for it myself, paid the vest, whatever. I said, I want to make a big splash. So I got there, and you know, going through the 3rd Street Tunnel in D.C. was backed up. So I arrived at the White House late, and then coming in, you're late. I said, well, I can't control traffic, you know. Mm-hmm. So I get in there, and then they Secret Service whisks off my vest, you know, and puts all the sensors on it, you know, check, make sure it's safe. And then I get there, and we still had to wait for 45 minutes. So I don't see what the big problem was. But anyway, we finally get in there, and I get a chance to meet him, and they present him. And I gave him the vest, and George Bush Sr.'s eyes light up like a little kid at Christmas. And while we were in that meeting, he went through every pocket and asked me about every lure. And he said, Benny, I had no idea that bass fishing was so good right here under my nose. And I said, well, sir, Bassmasters, when you're rated to Potomac, number 3 in the country for bass fishing. He said, I had no idea until Sandy, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor, she called me up and said, George, the bass fishing is great. I just went out and had a heck of a time. So there's a lady that loves to fish.
Wow.
Hey, Benny, let me ask you this question. I know, like, here in the state of Ohio, we have the Fish Ohio. awards, you know, for the largest fish caught.
Yes.
Okay. Is there like a national program? So like if, say, if I caught like, say, a 50-inch catfish, that I could go on a website somewhere and find out if my catch was the largest in the nation for that year, for that specific type?
Well, I'm going to check on that. Now, I know they have the International Fish and Game, and they keep records. And now, I'm not sure whether they are strictly saltwater or whether they are saltwater and freshwater.
Now they're freshwater, too, Benny.
Are they freshwater, too? So that would be a good place that would they keep records.
Right.
That you could go to that website and find, to this date, the largest to compare your catch.
Cool.
That is unbelievable. Fishing a month and she's already looking for records.
I love it.
I've already got my first Ohio Penn Award coming to me, so I'm off to the next one now.
Well, that's
what I like to hear.
It's addictive, isn't it, Melissa?
Oh, you have no idea. But I mean,
I used to fish an awful lot, and people would ask me how much I fish, and I say, one day a month, short of a divorce. And that was it.
Guys,
believe me, that was it.
I have created a monster.
That's a good kind, though.
But it's awesome. I love it. It's you know, the first fish she pulled up that was a big fish was a big sheephead. Of course, you know, they're kind of junk fish. Nobody really eats them. But it was like there was a 14-year-old standing there next to me. And she was so excited. And it was awesome. I thought it was really cool. And she dealt with it really well. She did a great job getting them in. She's doing a great job getting these big cats in. And I know we pulled in 10, 11, maybe even 12 pounders up and out. But she gets it.
Yeah, well, now down in the Chesapeake Bay here, D.C. is 110 miles north of the entrance of the Potomac into the Chesapeake Bay. And we have a non-indigenous species that was not as prolific 10 years ago, but it's been working its way up the bay, and that's the blue catfish.
Oh,
and we've had some
man.
Catches in the Chesapeake Bay over 50 pounds, 60 pounds.
Wow.
They're glutton. They just suck up everything.
Yeah, those things are monsters. Those are awesome.
Well, I can see now that Melissa and Wayne need to go to Washington and have Benny Williams take them fishing.
Oh, yeah, that would be a blast.
Oh, that would be great.
You just have to let me know whether you want bay fishing, you want freshwater fishing, or you want saltwater fishing, because that's the nice thing about D.C. You have access to all three.
I think
within 2 hours, 2.5 hours, ocean,
Benny,
bay.
You can invite her to one of the cast events we're going to put on back there, and she can help with that.
Oh, well, that would be great. Maybe the Sandy Point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect mundo.
She will probably want to go for the biggest possible thing she could catch. It wouldn't matter if it was an elephant.
Yeah.
If she could get it in on a rod and reel, that's what she'd like to go for.
Yeah.
I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I know when I was in the high school, 1974, around there, they caught a bull shark underneath the Chesapeake Bay that was over 600 pounds.
Oh, you just said the magic words there.
Well, but you got to be nice to sharks. They're important to the ecosystem. So.
Yeah, when I was
absolutely.
About 17 on the Columbia River, I caught a fish that I had to let go because it was too big. It was 8.5 feet long.
Was it a sturgeon?
It was a sturgeon. And you could only keep between 4 feet and 8 feet. That was the slot. And it was 8.5 feet long, and I couldn't keep it.
Right.
Oh, man, that's a huge fish.
Well, you know why that is, Jim. That's a slot limit, and they're designed to make sure that the large females are not removed from the population.
Absolutely.
They're the key to the success, because the larger the female, the more cocoon that we, that's a word we use to describe, a female can hold a lot of eggs. So when you have large females, which is your spawning stock biomass, those females are the key to maintaining that healthy stock, because the larger the female, the more eggs, the easier it is to maintain that population.
I have a question. Does that vary upon fish as far as sustaining the fishery?
Well, it also depends.
Well, the reason I ask that is because here in Ohio, as far as the channel cat are concerned, you're only allowed to keep one 28-inch plus catfish, you know, per day. And as far as what we've been catching, the big ones, they're not females, they're all males, the ones that are 28-inch and plus. But we've caught some pretty decent-sized females that are really close to that range, but all the big guys seem to be the males.
Well, they're dumber.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Well, here in D.C., right up at Fletcher's Boathouse, where we have a youth event that Jim mentioned previously, striped bass, you cannot catch them through Memorial Day. Reason being, they're spawning. And so in that area of the Potomac, it's not uncommon, because I've been to work with the D.C. Fish and Wildlife, for them to catch and measure striped bass 30, 40 pounds in that Potomac. A lot of people have no idea how good the fishing is in that Potomac, but that's why we have a moratorium to make sure the large females can come up and spawn.
Right. And I'm sure with the sturgeon, that's probably more along the lines because they're endangered, correct?
Oh, well, certain species are, but that's what has, and here's the other thing, too, real quick, that when you have long-lived fish, so for a red drum, for example, in the Atlantic, those fish can live 60 years. The sturgeon is another long-lived fish. So it takes some of these species 10, 12 years before they even mature. And so that's why it's so important to protect the large females, because when they're long-lived, that's what sustains that population.
Wow. Well, gosh, guys.
Where's the time go, Larry?
It flew by.
Jim, did you steal a couple minutes?
I'm sorry?
I thought I did. It went so fast. I can't believe we're done.
Well, we're going to have to do this again, as I promised the last time. This is an extraordinary hour. Gosh, Dr. Day, a fantastic show tonight.
Yep, like we knew it was going to be nonstop. And I wanted to say thank you, Jim, thank you, Benny, and thank you, Larry, for being the father to so many kids.
We try.
Well, we just beam with pride. There's no better feeling.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Next week on our program, D.D. Sharp, 60s singing sensation. We're going to be mashed potatoing and twisting with Chubby Checker. It's going to be a great hour. Folks, have a great week. We want to thank Jim Owens, Benny Williams, and, of course, our studio staff, Melissa Hovey, Wayne Larson, and, of course, Dr. Henry Day. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a great evening.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.